G'day and welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is CJ the DJ and I am your host for this week's Grad Chat. Of course, a show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs, as well as CFRC. So thank you very much to both of them. Now, if your mates miss the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CFRC Podcast. So no excuse not to hear what our awesome students and postdoctoral fellows are doing. Today, though, I would like to introduce and welcome back Alison Grocott, who is doing a PhD in management under the supervision of Dr. Julian Barley. Welcome back, Alyssa, to Grad Chat.
Thanks so much, Colette. I'm happy to be back and excited.
Except that you're not in Kingston at the moment. You're in Calgary.
Yes.
Which happens from time to time, particularly towards the when people are getting towards the end of their degree. Mm-hmm. They realize they don't always have to stay in town, and particularly with all the new technologies these days. So thank you for getting up earlier to do this, even though I know we're airing this in the evening. It's really appreciated. Mm-hmm. But I think I have to ask you, from what you told me before, you're almost finished, of course, and then hope to have a postdoc position over in Calgary, University of Calgary.
Yes, so I'm very excited. I did my undergraduate degree at the University of Calgary. I did it in psych, and I worked with Dr. Nick Turner at the business school. And so we'll be working together again for the postdoc, which is very exciting. And Dr. Turner is alumni of the program that I'm in now. So that's very cool.
Oh my God, talk about full circle things and also, you know, 6 degrees or less of separation type things, which is pretty awesome. But the other thing is, and if people were listening to me, I did say welcome back, because you were on here a few years ago, I think actually beginning of your PhD, but you're actually then starting, you were working on a different topic altogether, which was all more to do with workplace safety on people in management. What made you change topics? Because I'm just going to give a little hint here. Now you're looking at tattoos. Tattoos and workers. So what made you change from workplace safety to tattoos?
So that was a very tough decision for me. Workplace safety is very near and dear to my heart and a very personal topic. So for those that didn't hear my last one, because it was 3 years ago, my dad was killed in a workplace safety incident when I was 11 years old. And so that really drove my interest in researching workplace safety, particularly on the management side and how leaders have to deal with their own emotions and that of family members and coworkers. So that is still something I think is really important. But I found that once I started doing it all day, every day, it was taking an emotional toll. Yeah, it was getting to be too much. So looking forward of committing to a dissertation on that, which is a big endeavor, I didn't think that that was the best thing for my mental health. So
which is a good, I remember at the time when you told me, I'm thinking, oh my God, how are you managing to do this? Because I didn't think I could. But you, even in that short period of time that you did, you opened up people's eyes a lot on what that whole field was about.
Exactly. And I am so grateful to have been able to have an impact in some ways. And I was able to do talks at different organizations and companies. And I got to see firsthand having that impact on people and bringing awareness to that topic. So that was really meaningful, even if I didn't get to do all the studies I was planning.
And I think that's an interesting thing too, because people think when they come into doing graduate studies, or the outside people think, that you've got this one topic on your mind and that's it, you just go for it. But it doesn't always work that way. Whether it's for you, it was more an emotional thing that you changed topics, but other people suddenly realize they've got this topic and it's either been done before, which they didn't realize, you know, and what else can I contribute to that field? or something happens along the way and they read or see something new and they go, you know what, that is actually more interesting, I think, and I'd actually like to go into that direction. And so mm-hmm. It's not wasting time because you still learn a lot of things every step of the way, which you can transfer, of course, but it is really about being passionate about what you're wanting to research. And I guess if you don't have that passion for it or for whatever the other reasons are, it is a good idea to change mm-hmm. and go into a new topic.
Yeah, exactly. And one of my colleagues in my program, she talks about how she has like dissertation one, dissertation two, dissertation three, because over the 4 and some years now that we've been in the program, she's changed so many times because she has all these different interests and for various reasons, she doesn't end up wanting to pursue it as her dissertation, but she still finds it interesting and will maybe do side projects on that that can still turn into a publication or conference presentations.
Yeah. And I think that's the other thing people don't realize. You can still make papers out of what you've mm-hmm. what you've done, and you can still, as you did, give conference talks and outreach and things. So like I said, nothing is ever wasted. Which is really good, because I know how much time everyone puts into doing a PhD. So with that, mm-hmm. we're going to change topic and we're going to go and talk about tattoos. And your research topic is tattooed workers, namely employee perceptions and behaviors towards tattooed colleagues. What a great topic. And I remember when I first realized you changed your topic, I think it was last year, and there was a poster mm-hmm. presentation going on at the management program. Mm-hmm. And I got, what, you've changed? And why tattoos and things? And you started to explain it to me. So I'm really glad that you've come on to talk about it. So first of all, just give us, why did you want to choose this topic? Why tattoos in the workplace? What mm-hmm. brought that to you?
I think tattoos are just such an interesting form of art, and I think it brings in so many different things on self-expression and identity and appearance at work. And while it's a very kind of niche area, it can be translated to other diversity aspects of acceptance in the workplace. And so I thought it was just a unique thing. And also with tattoos, it's a choice you're making. So with some identity aspects, you're not making a choice to have that identity. That is, you know, like I identify as a woman and I am not necessarily choosing to present myself in various ways, but with tattoos, it's a choice to modify your body. And that's much more of a choice, or it's a bigger commitment than, say, wearing a certain attire to work.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at clothing, there's fads in clothing that come and go, and people make a choice to be part of the fad or not. But mm-hmm. in a year's time, it's probably changed, and you can change with it. Whereas tattoos are more permanent. So
yeah,
as you said,
exactly.
It is a big choice whether you want to have a tattoo.
Yeah, exactly. And similar, like I bring up gender because it's another mm-hmm. aspect that can be discriminatory in the workplace, and we can dress more femininely, but then you can change that dress and dress more masculinely. And so there is more fluidity there with tattoos. Once you get it, it's there. I mean, you can remove it, but that's a whole nother big process too.
Yes. Well, so with that then, I know a few years ago I didn't realize you had tattoos, but you do now. Have you been discriminated now because your tattoos are more visible?
Yeah, so that's interesting. I feel I've had some experiences in the past, like at work, not so much, but also I doing my PhD, I work from home all the time.
Right.
So, but even before I had super visible tattoos, I was working as a server and I was working on a half sleeve, and I had some customers ask me how much money I was spending on my tattoos.
Oh.
And they made a comment that they are maybe tipping me too much if I can afford to get
Oh,
tattoos.
really? Wow.
So that's like one workplace example.
Yes.
A non-workplace example was as you mentioned, I have visible tattoos now, so I do have ones on my hands that I can't cover at all. And when I got my palm tattooed, and I was living in Kingston at the time, but I went to Montreal for this. I thought I could get the last train home, which I was wrong. And so I had to stay in Montreal that night. And I was trying to book a hotel online and it wasn't working. And my mom is on the phone with me and she says, Alyssa, you can walk into a hotel and ask for a room. Of
True.
course. Technology. So I go into a nice hotel and I go up, and to set the stage, I'm wearing like athletic shorts, a t-shirt that has a skull on it from a tattoo shop. And with my shorts, I have my one full leg tattooed. And I probably look like a bit of a disaster because I've been getting tattooed all day. And my palm is freshly tattooed, wrapped in Saran wrap. So I don't think I look like I belong in this hotel. And I go up to the person at the front desk and I ask them if they have any rooms. And she told me no, they were fully booked.
Oh, just
So I
from looking
go,
at you.
yeah, because then I go outside and I'm thinking, I'm just tired and I'm hungry and I want to sit down and eat some food. And I called my mom again and she was able to book. I don't know why I was having difficulties booking online. She was able to book me a room online at that same hotel. Now, I'm sure there are various other reasons that went into the decision for that person to say that I couldn't get a room there, but I have a hard time not thinking that the
That it's
tattoos
because
played a
of
role.
yeah. That's awful, to be perfectly honest. I mean, it's like, nothing quite like you, but when you're traveling, you don't always look the best, right? And you do go into hotels, and sometimes you can tell that they're looking you up and down, thinking, do these people even have the right money to stay here? So people, this is the thing, people make assumptions, don't they, about
They
someone.
do.
Rightly or wrongly, they do. Everyone makes assumptions, and that makes things very difficult. So with that though, what? Because that's your own experiences. But what I'm seeing more tattoos. More people are getting tattoos, and not just one little one that's hidden. Like I've got one on my back, but it's no. Unless I'm wearing a very small top, no one actually knows it's there. But more and more people are getting more visible tattoos. What started that explosion? Because I would say the last 10 years I'm seeing more. What do you think, or what do you think the proportion of people now actually have a tattoo? I'd probably say at least one in two, but maybe I'm wrong. I'm just guessing.
So I don't have Canadian statistics on this. I couldn't find it when I was looking into it. But in the United States, it's one third of the population has a tattoo.
Okay.
So, and then when we think about visibility, not everyone, as you mentioned, you have a tattoo, but it's not visible. And so not all of these people with tattoos have visible tattoos. So we can reasonably say that fewer than one third of
Right.
people have visible tattoos.
Right.
So it's
Yeah.
really not that many. And to your point about like the explosion of it, some of the research on it, more from sociology, kind of maps the and history maps the history of tattoos. And a big thing was seeing it in media more. So in the early
Right.
2000s, like different TV shows like Miami Ink, and just having more celebrities with tattoos kind of made it a little bit more commonplace, I want to say.
But I think with those, I mean, you brought up a good point there about some of the in the media or TV, etc., movies, what have you. But it was more, and this is going to sound awful because it's not meant to be, but usually the people that they portrayed with tattoos were in certain jobs or within certain groups. And things. It wasn't necessarily widespread. It was, the biker gangs or people who worked in the ports and in the navy, and so it was very distinct. Oh, gangs, It was very distinctive of which people they portrayed with these tattoos. But it's not just those groups anymore that with tattoos. It's everybody from all ilks.
Yeah, exactly. But that is where the discrimination still comes and the stigma comes from still, because especially in North America, and just talking about settler populations, because Indigenous populations have their own meanings and history. But when we look at like the settler populations, that's what, you know, gang members, bikers, and criminals are the ones that had tattoos.
It was tagging, wasn't it? They were tagging themselves.
Yeah, and we still see that perception in, even if people think that they're past that, we still have that perception, especially when that's how tattoos were portrayed in media. And I always find it interesting, people, when they see me with all my tattoos and then I say that I'm a PhD student, the amount of people that are surprised say, I never would have guessed that based on your appearance.
Yes. It's assumptions. Again, assumptions. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because, I mean, yes, you've got your hand tattooed, but then there's certain cultures where, you know, they have the henna tattoos on the backs of their hands. And, you know, when it's, we talk one just then about gangs and things. And then there's the other side, as you mentioned too, with Indigenous and cultural practices where tattooing is part of their culture, their religion, that sort of thing. Are you seeing in your research, and I know you're looking more on the employment side, but even in that, are you seeing cultural differences of how people perceive, say, someone with a henna tattoo as opposed to the coloured ink? Well, maybe for yours, when you're a white person that hasn't come from that cultural background. I'm assuming, again, I'm making assumptions.
Yeah, your assumption is correct. Yes. So I haven't seen, unfortunately, we don't, or to my knowledge, there isn't this comparison across cultures, definitely not in the workplace research, but I am really interested to see if other areas have looked at that more, because it is a big question and something I often get asked, because there are such cultural differences, some cultures being more accepting, some being way less accepting. So it would be really interesting to see, workplace or beyond the workplace, what the different cultures, how we're seeing that nowadays in different cultures.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I know in New Zealand, a lot of the Maori women now are doing more of their face tattoos, and that's part of the culture. But for a long time, they didn't.
Yeah.
But now they're starting to do it a little bit more and show their culture and their passion and their, this is where I belong. And it seems to be okay in New Zealand, but I wonder if they stepped out of New Zealand, or Aotearoa, I should call it, if they step out, if they'd have the same reactions from people.
Or
non-reactions, I should say, non-reactions.
Yes. Yeah. And a lot of people bring up New Zealand and ask me if I've compared, because it is interesting, like, if people step outside of their culture, because it could be accepted there, but say you want to move or you're traveling and you see those different reactions, that would be really interesting.
So another chapter for you.
Yes.
Okay, so let's look at this. So how are you studying tattoos in the workplace? And I guess what makes your research different from what else has been going on this topic?
So I'm doing experimental vignette studies. So I have little written descriptions of fictional workers, and then I have an image, an accompanying image of the worker, so that I can get at the tattoo aspect.
Right.
So the worker either has no tattoo or a light, what I'm calling a light tattoo. So by light, I mean friendly or cheerful and happy, or a dark tattoo, which would be intimidating, threatening, or rebellious. So participants are randomly assigned to see one of these images with the little written description describing this worker, and told that this is their coworker. And then they're asked to fill out a survey on their perceptions and how they would behave towards this person if they were working with them.
It's interesting that you've split it up into two categories. Those that have got more aggressive tattoos, more the ones that we're sort of used to seeing in the olden days, as opposed to those fun, friendly things, maybe little dolphin or something like that, a butterfly or a flower or something, which is less intimidating, as you said. But how do you choose your participants in this to go through looking at, to show their perceptions of the different groups? How do you choose, though? Because how do you not get bias into it in the first place? Or is that the whole point? You just pick randomly and this is how the general population works. We can't just go and get people who are okay with TATs.
So I'm using an online data collection platform, Prolific. So ideally, it'll be people with a variety of opinions, though it's hard to say, you know, there might be certain people that self-select into doing these surveys on these platforms.
Yes.
So and when I have the information about the study posted, it doesn't say anything about tattoos. So people aren't going in with that perception of it. And it is something to consider, though, like how accepting people are of tattoos and how that will change their responses on the survey. But we do see with most tattoo research, people will ask the participants, do you have a tattoo? Yes or no? And they take that into consideration in the analyses. And perceptions don't really change. Like, people with tattoos are still discriminatory towards other people with tattoos.
Oh, okay. Well, that's an interesting find. You'd think they'd be more accommodating with that.
And I guess it just goes to show, like, how deep the bias is against tattoos and how we don't... It's one of those things that we say, oh, we've come so far, but there are still... It's hard to get past...
Yes.
The historical meanings that we've assigned to them.
So with these little vignettes you're doing and the people who are looking at them, I wonder whether if you were looking at an employee in an office environment as opposed to, say, in the labor, you know, the labor, the plumbers, the gardeners, that sort of thing. Would you have enough data to be able to see the differences, whether one person who's looking at someone in the office would have a different opinion if that person was actually a gardener?
Yeah, so that's another question that I get, or a comment that I get a lot about industry and industry differences. So I don't have anything about industry in the study that I've done. I will be including that in my next study. But we do see, looking at prior research, that job context does matter. So there are situations in which tattoos are actually seen positively and they're an asset.
Which ones would those be?
Yeah.
Where would they think that?
And I can speak from research on the hiring context, because that's where most workplace research is. So when tattoos fit the brand image, say a skate shop or a dive bar, then hiring managers are like, yeah, I want that, because it makes the brand more relatable to the customers and it just fits the whole image.
Right.
And then another situation is, or context, is when the job is creative. So a graphic designer.
Right.
There's one study that I love that showed that a graphic designer with tattoos is more likely to be hired than a graphic designer without tattoos. And the reason is they're seen as more competent.
Right. Well, I guess with that, it was, if their competency comes from their confidence to be able to put it on themselves or other people, you know, not many people would want to, if they wouldn't, it weren't very good, want to put it on someone's skin. so to speak. And what about the office people, though? Because they can be a bit sticklers, although I must admit dress code is changing big time from what it used to be, because it comes down to, in an office, a lot of it dress code. I mean, you're in the Smith, the management program is housed within the Smith School of Business. you know, business people, suits and ties, you know, all this sort of stuff. Does a tattoo fit in that environment?
That is something that I am really interested in, because I think when we think about workplaces, like, we often tend to think about just a typical office environment. And it's tough to say. We don't have any research on that, which I think is unfortunate, but it does come down to dress code. And I think a lot of the times people are more concerned with customer facing jobs, because that's going to impact business.
Well, again, it's going to impact brand, isn't it?
Yes.
It's the brand.
Exactly. And so I think in media, there's more about customer service environments. Like, Starbucks was a big one that they used to not allow their employees to show tattoos or have colored hair and whatnot. And then they changed their dress code policy to allow for that.
Right.
And so we see more talk about that. But in the office environment, yeah, there are more strict dress codes. And me coming from psych, it was much more relaxed. And then going into the business environment, and I see people walking around all dressed up, and I'm there in my athleisure wear.
Okay. And that's why you went into research. Well, I must admit, even myself, I've been here 18 years. When I first started, I was wearing suits. And as people would know me now, I am not wearing suits. Because, and I get dressed appropriately depending on where I have to be, because it is an image thing, and I'm representing the office. So when I'm outside of the office, I feel I have to dress a bit more differently.
Yes.
But yes, this comes down to this dress code. So I can imagine that leaders would discriminate against employees who have tattoos, but would employees discriminate against leaders who have tattoos? So it's flipping the script here. So one thing, the first part is the leaders and then the employee, or potentially hiring. So it's the hiring thing. If you can get past the hiring, then you may be okay. But let's flip the script. What do employees think about leaders having tattoos? Have you been able to sort of pull that out as well as part of your study?
Yeah, so this is actually where I really wanted to go with my research. I wanted to look specifically at leaders with tattoos. But then I was thinking, well, first I need to show that leaders are perceived differently than just general coworkers. Like, if you're looking at an employee perceiving their colleague, are they going to perceive their leader any differently from their coworker? So I did include that in my study. And I thought it could go either way. So on the one hand, leaders are held to higher standards. So they might be discriminated against more or perceived more negatively. On the other hand, having that higher level, like the higher position of authority, adds a protective factor. So they might not be perceived as negatively. They may be perceived positively.
Right.
So I didn't make any specific...
Maybe feel more part of the team as opposed to this different level.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of brings them down, makes them a little bit more relatable. So I didn't make any specific predictions or hypotheses about it. And I found it didn't really matter in my study. And that's kind of a theme for most of my study. Most of my predictions were not supported.
That happens in research, right? Just when you think you're on to something new.
Yeah. And I'm actually, at the end of the day, I'm happy about it, because now I have a little more bite-sized things that I can, significant things that I can share. But the one thing that I did find is that workers with dark tattoos, so those intimidating, threatening tattoos, were perceived as more artistic and then less discriminated against in that pathway. And so this was significant when the worker was a coworker or a supervisor, but not when it was a supervisor's supervisor. It's a little bit higher of a position. So we're seeing there may be some positive outcomes when it's a peer or immediate leader, but maybe not so for higher level leaders. But something that I need to look a little bit more into moving forward.
I love it. I love it. So has your work taken into consideration, you know, since COVID, the workplace has changed a lot. I mean, not everyone's coming in every day, not everyone's front facing in terms of full body front facing, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of the screen time.
Yeah.
And depending on how you do your camera, it can just be your head, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Or you can block yourself out.
Yeah.
So did anything show up about that, or was it not even considered at this point in time? Because that was probably another research string for you.
You know, that is a really interesting question, because, and I'm surprised it honestly has not come up at all.
Oh, okay.
In any of my conversations, but it's really interesting to me that it hasn't come up, and two, I didn't even really think of it, because I mean, one, I work from home, and also like my supervisor Julian and I have book chapters where we've wrote extensively about how the workplace and safety specifically has changed with more work from home.
Right.
And so why we didn't consider tattoos with the remote, I'm not sure. But it is a good point. And it's something that I think gets to one of the things that I'm really interested in, that I didn't include in my studies, but there's seeing that somebody has visible tattoos, mm-hmm. but there's also knowing that someone has tattoos. And so when you see them, they're very salient, but can perceptions change when maybe you're not seeing them, but this person has told you that they have tattoos?
Right.
But yeah, the virtual aspect does add a layer of privacy.
But even this interview, right? Yeah. If you didn't use your hands a lot,
yeah,
I wouldn't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
but you do. You're very expressive.
Exactly.
And I wonder, even in other conversations that perhaps you've had online, whether that's made a difference for you or not.
Yeah, well, it was interesting because I did get a question one time. I was talking about my research virtually, and I had on a hoodie, and my fingers weren't tattooed at the time, so you couldn't quite see as much of the tattoos on my hand. And they were asking me about my choices in the tattoos in my study, and they said, how much time have you actually spent in tattoo shops? I'm thinking,
A lot. I love it.
Yeah, so it is really interesting considering that, because yeah, for the most part right now I can hide that I'm pretty heavily tattooed, and I think that's the case for a lot of people. And a lot of people get tattoos only to a certain point on their wrist so that they can cover it. And now with being virtual, it adds even more flexibility in being able to get tattoos without people knowing.
I think going back to some of your comments right in the beginning, I think one of the things is that people's perceptions, I mean, we can't stop people making assumptions and perceptions on different things, but getting a tattoo is a personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you like tattoos, I would think, I mean, I don't know if you've talked to people with tattoos in the workplace or just people who are viewing people with tattoos. I would like to think those, if you've made a choice to put a tattoo, not just have a tattoo, but have one that's more visible, that they've understood. There could be ramifications for that,
mm-hmm.
rightly or wrongly, because it shouldn't make a difference. But, yeah. You know, that's another area to, you know, talking to people who have the tattoos. And as you said, how you got discriminated from in a couple of occasions and things, and probably more than just a couple. You know, what's the flip side of your study on that?
Yeah, and it's interesting. So I started getting tattooed when I turned 18, and I would go to a shop here in Calgary, and at the time, the artist that I would see, she wouldn't tattoo hands or necks because they are considered job-stopper tattoos.
Right.
And
so even the tattoo is new, you had to be careful.
Yes. Yeah. And even I only recently got my fingers tattooed, and when I was getting them done, all the artists were saying, like, this is quite a significant body modification, because it's like full fingers, not just little ones on my fingers. And the artist that did them, he said that he wouldn't do something like that for somebody that didn't already have tattoos.
Right.
And some people perceive that as like having to earn, like quote unquote, earn the tattoos, but it's more so getting used to the attention and how people are going to react,
Right. Yep.
because you don't always realize that until you have lots of tattoos or highly visible tattoos that you are going to be perceived differently and people are going to look at you differently.
Do you think down the track with all the EDIIA stuff that, well, it's happening in this country, not necessarily south of the border, do you think this will become part of not being discriminatory in the workplace, including tattoos? Because we talk about, discrimination, whether it's cultural, race, color, et cetera, but do you think tattoos have a place in that and should have a place in that? Because people can be very subjective and biased.
I think down the line it will come into the conversation more. If we continue to see like more and more people get tattooed, I haven't experienced nearly as many negative discriminatory interactions as other identities within an EDI space. So I don't think it's necessarily top of the priority list, but I think it will come into conversation. And I think all of it kind of comes together in the same way of if we look more broadly, just workplaces and people being accepting of,
Accepting.
So I think it all ties together. But the one interesting thing is that for tattoos, there's no policies saying you can't discriminate against people with tattoos.
Right.
Legally, it's not protected.
It's not protected.
So that is, I mean, in most cases, they're going to probably come up with other reasons too, or they probably don't even know that it's a tattoo. Like it's one of those unconscious bias things
Right.
where,
Right.
and there is one study that showed that if you have tattoos and you're unqualified for the job, that's the least likely scenario to be hired. So it might be that job qualifications help us overcome some of these discriminatory practices. But yeah, unfortunately, tattoos are not protected.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of food for thought there, isn't there?
Yes.
Just as well you're going on to do a postdoc. Is it going to be the similar topic in tattoos?
I think it's going to
In
be more
tattoos and
broad.
psychology and
Yeah, I would love to do some more work on tattoos, but I will probably be doing, Nick and I are talking about doing research on knowledge translation and dissemination
Ah, great,
because I'm
great.
really interested in that space and I think it's so important to share research beyond academia.
Oh, hello. I mean, I know you did 3MT and all that sort of stuff, and so.
So I love that and yeah, kind of talking with Nick and Julian about how I can do something related to that in the postdoc, and there's not really necessarily research on that. So Nick and I are talking about doing research on how can we, what's the best way to share knowledge, and does it actually get, like if we take certain construct in academia, say safety culture is something that we both have like
Well, I always
been.
think in terms of knowledge translation, apart from using different words, the grad flicks, all right, video. I'm a visual person. I like to see visuals, and that's to me, and I know you did yours, that's a good way of doing it, of that knowledge translation and getting your point across. If people don't quite follow it with the words, they can usually pick up enough from a visual.
Yeah, so I'm actually trying to start different social media pages to share that. So like Instagram, TikTok. I downloaded TikTok for the first time. So I'm learning. But this is how people are getting their information now. And so trying to tailor it in that way and just making little bite-sized pieces
Well,
that are engaging.
I call grad flicks research trailers.
Yes, I love it.
So, that quick 1 minute, bam, or less, and bam, gives you enough to get you interested.
Yeah, and it's hard to do when, the academic training, you have to just have everything, especially when you're writing like a thesis or a dissertation, you include absolutely everything. So choosing what is important.
You should put at the beginning of each of your chapters a little video clip of what that
Yes.
chapter is. In case you didn't quite
Yeah.
understand, watch this.
Yeah,
So.
exactly. And you do get bogged down. It's interesting, like within academia, with the whole peer review process, sometimes I think, like I do think the peer review process is so important, but sometimes it's frustrating getting back reviews and you read them and you're thinking, well, you clearly missed this whole
Point.
big section in the paper. But we end up being overworked and people can't always fully read every single thing in a paper. So it's challenging. And yeah, the research trailers are great.
Well, with that, Alyssa, we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about your new topic, i.e. tattoos in the workplace and how employees react to people with tattoos. Wish you the best of luck with all of that. And I also wish you the best with your postdoc. It's been a pleasure talking with you again, and hopefully we'll see you around.
Yeah, thanks so much, Carla. This has been great and so much fun being back.
Good, 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 good. So, as I usually say, that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat sadly comes to an end. Don't forget you can download the show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CFRC Podcast. Just type in a Grad Chat. Until next week, this is CJ the DJ signing off with a big hooray.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.